We can say, oh, the universe is totally different, because when the life of this world or this universe finishes,
yes,
then completely another world, completely okay, another strange sort of, let's say, universe will be there. Of course, even universe is not a true term for that, because the characteristics of that is totally different from what we have on this planet. There will be no kind of moon or sun or, let's say, Earth or these planets revolving around the sun, for example, like four seasons, like water, oceans, all these sort of things that we have in this world. Of course, they will not be there. That resurrection is completely and categorically different. Akhir al-Zaman happens in this world, in this earthly life. It's not similar to that one.
That's all right. So there have been mentioned some signs for end time. I mean, and during different eras, the people try to adjust some of them with their own timings. First of all, are these signs true or authentic? I mean, are they based on the Quran and Ahadith? And can you enumerate some of them for us?
Yes, of course. According to the ayat of the Holy Quran and some of the surahs of the Holy Quran, some of the, let's say, characteristics of the Akhir al-Zaman are mentioned particularly in riwayat. For example, the some of them that I can mention is that there would be lots of spiritual kind of crisis in the whole world. That whole world and all the people would be, what we can say, will commit lots of sins, and people became like criminals, sinful, going astray and being in the wrong path, in the wrong way.
Yes.
And being ignorant of the hereafter life, of divine, let's say, rulings and, let's say, divine kind of guidance. Satanic kind of ideas, ideologies, instructions will be followed at the end of this world, and then there would be lots of wars, conflicts, battles among the nations, among the people, killing, massacring each the people, each other. This sort of crisis will be there, and then Dajjal, the evil kind of figure, will reappear in this world, who will be, of course, again the very worst and the very, let's say, horrifying criminal kind of figure, who will come and starts bloodshedding and also killing, massacring, committing great and major sins in this world. Catastrophes, masa'ib, difficulties, challenges, problems will be a lot, will increase.
Yes.
And the people suffer from them. Khuruj al-Sufyani, and then these are lots, some of the things that are mentioned.
Yes.
And there would be a kind of very loud and we can say even also horrifying kind of sound that will be heard from the sky.
Okay.
That is called the heavenly kind of voice will be heard by the people.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Baqiyatullahi khayrun lakum in kuntum mu'minin. Wama
we say, Allahumma ij'alni min ansarihi wa a'wanihi. O Allah, make me from among his helpers and from among his ansar and a'wan, meaning is his close helpers, and even if I'm not there, then at least the ones who are his assistants. I want to be part of that movement. The ones who come and come around him. The ones who hurry to meet any need that he has. Any need that he has, I want to be the one who fulfills his need. And I want to be among those who follow his commands and protect him.
Salamullahi al-kamil al-tam al-shamil al-am wa salawatuhu al-da'imatu wa barakatuhu al-qa'imatu al-tammah على حجة الله ووليه في أرضه وبلاده وخليفته على خلقه وعباده.
In one of the letters that he writes to Sheikh Mufid, he tells us One of the ways that we can end the ghibah and make his reappearance come faster. What does he say? He says that if only our Shias would come together with united hearts, number one. Number two, in order to fulfill their pledge and their promise to us. لَمَا تَأَخْرَ عَنْهُمُ الْيُمْنُ بِلِقَائِنَا. That blessing that they're looking for of meeting us and being with us, meaning the Imam, that will not be delayed.
So, for sure, we say that we are now, at this time, we are passing the life in end of time. I mean, because some of the signs have shown, for example, the massacre of the people, you know, and some other things, these deviations from the right path of Allah. One of the signs is that the people become weak during the end time, isn't it, in their religious beliefs. So, can we say that now we are passing life in end time, Shaykh?
One of the points that based on which we can say that we are in the Akhir al-Zaman is Ba'athatu, last messenger.
Okay.
I mean, the coming or the advent of Islam, which is the last religion.
Yes.
And the Prophet of Islam, who is the last prophet, the seal of the prophets. Yeah, it is one of the signs that tells us that we are in Akhir al-Zaman.
So the beginning starts with the advent of Islam, okay?
Yes, because the last prophet, the last religion indicates that it is the last, it is the end of the world. But the other signs that we see also leads to the kind of, what we can say, spiritual crisis nowadays we do have. You know that now we have devil, or let's say evil kind of values, wrong values are being spreaded all over the world, like homosexuality, let's say irreligious kind of ideas, ideologies, thoughts, values, principles are followed by majority of the people in the world. We have like battles, wars in the world. Yeah, this sort of things we have sometimes, difficulties, challenges, masaib we have in the world. But Khuruj al-Sufyani, that nida, or let's say the reappearance of Imam al-Asr, descendants of Isa alayhi salam, and of course Ya'juj and Ma'juj who will attack, Raj'a returning. Mm-hmm. These are some other signs that we do not have till now. But at the end, what we have is that there would be a kind of universal peace, universal security, universal prosperity in all the world.
That's right.
That the last Imam with his companions will provide us with that sort of stability, peace, and progress in the end of life.
And consider that we as Muslims now, we are passing in end of time. Will our lifestyle will be different from the previous generations of the people? Or, for example, are there any special responsibilities or duties for those believers who are passing life in end time?
According to Riwayat, the Holy Prophet said that those people who can save their iman at the Akhir al-Zaman, they are among the best, let's say, people. They are among the best faithful people and followers of true religion. It shows that, it indicates that the means by which we can be misguided is increased considerably at the end of the time.
Yes.
For example, the previous generations, the followers of previous prophets, they did not have access this easily that nowadays people have access to all the things according to this on the cyberspace, on, let's say, internet, whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
You see that nowadays the young generation could be very easily misguided.
Yes.
Because they have easily access to all, let's say, the means of misguidance.
Yes.
That's why it shows that, yes, Akhir al-Zaman is the challenging time and the most difficult and hard time to stay mu'min.
Yes.
To save our iman. Because of this, the Prophet says that those people who can safeguard their iman against the evil things at the end of the time, at Akhir al-Zaman, they are the best people. Yeah, this is the main difference between our generations and the coming generations. to the previous generations.
That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, please visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husaynin wa hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. And this is your host, Brother Mustafa. On this show, we discuss Islamic ethics and morality and what steps we can take towards reaching God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, what are some practical steps in Islamic ethics and spirituality? And it's difficult to, you know, talk about this topic and not speak about one of the most important pillars of Islam, of Islamic spirituality, and that is, of course, Salah, our prayers, our daily prayers, and those recommended prayers that we have in our life. Prayers, it's something that we do every single day, and they sort of become a habit for us. And many times that we don't necessarily always feel that connection to God through our prayers. Whereas we're told that prayers are the most important pillar of Islam, we're told it's the best way to reach success. For example, in the call to prayer in the Azan, it says, you know, Hayya ala salah, hurry to prayer. We're told Hayya ala al-falah, hurry to success. Hayya ala khayr al-amal, hurry to the best of actions. I remember there was a phase maybe in my own life where I started questioning, you know, why am I praying? It's something that I was doing every day and it became a habit. When you turn to the Holy Quran, you will start seeing how important prayer is as a means of reaching God. When you start looking at the narrations of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt, you'll see how much they emphasize the prayer. some practical ways that potentially that I can offer that can help you to improve your prayer. You know, one is realizing that prayers themselves is a way of connecting to God. It's a way of connecting the seen to the unseen. We have verses in the Quran which use words, you know, the word wasl, for example, is used in prayers. And wasl, again, means to connect. It's just a way of, for example, the analogy that's many times used is, you know, when you call someone, when you connect to the internet. If you're not connecting, if you don't have the right connection, then, you know, that then let's say you're calling someone on WhatsApp and you're making a video call or a audio call and the connection is weak, they're not going to be able to hear you that well, right? So we want to have a strong connection. And that strong connection can only occur, for example, when we are not committing sins, when we are purifying ourselves, and we're truly motivated towards reaching Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. One of the things that we can focus on is, for example, you know, is understanding the meanings behind the actions of our daily prayers. So when we stand in prayers, we're told we're doing qiyam, and it's a way of straightening ourselves. When you see, for example, when a commander walks into, you know, their soldiers, you'll see they'll automatically stand up straight. They'll stand up, you know, they won't slouch. They'll be standing in an attentive position. And this is what we're also doing when we're standing in a position. And when we read, for example, Surah Fatiha, the opening chapter of the Holy Quran, this is a way of telling us, you know, you're now connecting to Allah, the Almighty. We're sending our praise to someone. You know, so focusing on the meanings of Surah Fatiha while we're standing in that attentive position and focusing on those meanings will definitely help us make a better connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Similarly, when we go into the ruku, you know, when we have our hands on our knees, that also is a way of connecting to God. And I'll speak a little bit more about that once we're back from the break.
Your mercy, your love is on our knees. So all I need. So all I need. All I need. Oh. All I need to be all I need, and I know that you see how much you mean to me. 'Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me. 'Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be, and I know that you see. How much you mean to me. Your love is all I need.
And we're speaking about the importance of prayer in Islamic spirituality and a step towards reaching God. We spoke about, you know, doing qiyam when we're standing in prayer. It's a way of straightening ourselves and straightening our lives. That's what it's symbolizing. Now, when we go into the ruku, one of the things that we're told is to stretch our back, right? Is to make our back extremely straight. In one of the sayings, Imam Ali says, you know, straighten your neck, stretch your necks in a way as if you're offering your neck to God. One of the physical impacts of stretching ourselves is that it stretches our spine, right? It stretches our back. Now, there's a book, you know, a psychology book. If you go look it up, it's Our Body Keeps a Score. I think that's the name of the book, or The Body Keeps a Score. And it talks about how when we emotionally suffer, those emotions can get converted into, for example, bodily pains. For example, you'll see that sometimes when people are stressed, they'll have neck pain, they'll have shoulder pain. Many times it's back pain or lower back pain. One of the impacts of stretching ourselves in ruku is stretching that area, our back, right? And that can help release, for example, many times negative emotions. If you look at some of the verses of the Holy Quran, when it talks about doing ruku, it also talks about, for example, giving zakat or doing tazkiyah or purification of our soul. When we're doing ruku, God purifies our souls. He says He removes the burdens of sins from our back. So these actions in our prayers, they're not only just physical actions, they're having a spiritual impact on us as well. When you do ruku in this way, when you spend time, you know, when you spend, let's say, your ruku is a bit longer, when your hands are on your knees and you stretch your back, you spend time, you'll feel your body will stretch and relax, right? You will feel looser, you will feel lighter. And if you're not feeling that, then spend time doing that, you know, focusing on that aspect of ruku. The next step that we have in the holy prayer is that when we go into sujood, when we place our forehead, you know, on the ground, and we're told when we have our forehead on the ground, this is the moment when we're closest to God, right? This is the closest that we can become to God. And it's a time when God says that He sends His rahmah, He sends His mercy upon us. A very interesting thing that a speaker once noted about this position is that it is very much similar to the position of a baby when they're in the womb of their mother. And interestingly, in Arabic, the word used for the womb of the mother is rahim, right? And in Arabic, so every word comes from a root word. And the root word comes up with different words which are related to each other. So for example, rahim is very much related to the word rahmah because they both have the same root word. So I would say that when God is saying you're in sujood and you are, you know, He's sending His rahmah on us, you are becoming purified just how, not only are you being purified, your spirit is being made just in the same way a baby is being made in the womb of the mother. God is giving you that mercy and rahmah that a child receives from his mother. You're receiving it from God in that position of sujood. So concentrating on all of these actions and aspects of our prayers will definitely help us improve, you know, our spirituality, will definitely help us reach God. One final point I want to wrap up on is one of the things that we talk a lot about is concentration in prayers. And many times people are doing different exercises to help themselves concentrate, and that's all really good. However, I would say concentration in prayers is an automatic process. It is something that should happen automatically. It is a result of, for example, of not committing sins. It's a result of keeping yourself purified throughout the day. When you do come and stand on that prayer mat and in front of God, your heart is ready to really love God, and He automatically places love and light in your heart that you don't even need to think about concentrating. It will happen automatically, inshallah. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and please continue listening to IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share He knows.
Through consistent and glaring failures in their coverage, establishment media, including supposedly liberal outlets from the BBC and CNN to the Guardian and New York Times, have smoothed the way for the Zionist regime to carry out mass slaughter in Gaza, what the World Court has assessed as a genocide. Western establishments and their media have been waging a giant campaign of misdirection for the past 5 months, as they have against Palestinians over previous years and decades. Western publics have been encouraged to look in the wrong direction. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Mr. Middle East, I wrote, hostages tortured to death, parents executed in front of their children, doctors beaten, babies murdered, sexual assault weaponized. This is part of an ever-growing list of documented atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in the 5 months since October 7th, quite separate from the carpet bombing of 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza and a famine induced by the Zionist regime's obstruction of aid. Last week, an investigation by the Israeli newspaper Haaretz disclosed that some 27 Palestinians seized off Gaza's streets over the past 5 months are known to have died during interrogations inside the occupied territories called Israel. Some were denied medical treatment, but most are likely to have been tortured to death. 3 months ago, a Haaretz editorial warned that the Zionist regime jails must not become execution facilities for Palestinians. Israeli TV channels have been excitedly taking viewers on tours of detention centers, showing the appalling conditions Palestinians are kept in, as well as the psychological and physical abuse they are subjected to. An Israeli regime judge recently called the makeshift cages in which Palestinians are held unsuitable for humans. Remember, a large proportion of the 4,000 or so Palestinians taken hostage by the Zionist regime since October 7th, probably the vast majority, are civilians, like the men and boys paraded through Gaza's streets or held in a stadium stripped of clothing before being dragged off to a dark cell in Israel. According to Israeli regime media, many dozens of Palestinian women, including pregnant women, have been seized too, but in their case, off camera. According to United Nations legal experts, Palestinian women are suffering the most degrading forms of abuse at the hands of the Zionist regime's military. The experts observed that Palestinian women and girls in detention were reportedly being subjected to multiple forms of sexual assault. At least two female Palestinian detainees were reportedly raped, while others were reportedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. The Zionist regime troops are also believed to have taken photos of female detainees in degrading circumstances and then uploaded them online. Palestinian women and girls in Gaza are also reported by their families to have gone missing after contact with the Zionist regime army. They said, "There are disturbing reports of at least one female infant forcibly transferred by the Israeli army into Israel, and of children being separated from their parents, whose whereabouts remain unknown." A separate report by the UN last week revealed that 21 of its staff humanitarian aid workers had been snatched by the Zionist regime. They were then tortured to extract confessions, most likely false, of involvement in the October 7th events. Their torture included beatings, waterboarding, and threats to family members. Those confessions were cited by Western allies as the grounds, in fact, the only known grounds for cutting off funding to the UN relief agency UNRWA, the last lifeline for Gaza's starving population. It was these claims extracted through torture that helped the Zionist regime rationalize its imposing of a famine on Gaza. Of the 1,000 detainees subsequently released, 29 were children, one as young as six, and 80 women. Some were reported to have cancer and chronic illnesses such as Alzheimer's. According to the UN investigation, Palestinians reported severe punishment beatings, being caged with attack dogs, and suffering sexual assault. Physical evidence such as broken ribs, dislocated shoulders, bite marks, and burns was still visible many weeks later. We'll be right back. These horrors, of course, are not just taking place in cells and interrogation rooms inside Israel. Gaza is being subjected to astonishing levels of brutality and sadism from the Zionist regime troops, quite aside from the carpet bombing and enforced starvation of civilians. The Zionist regime snipers have fired into Gaza's hospitals, killing medical staff and patients there. The Zionist regime's military has used Palestinians as human shields, including one man sent into a hospital, his hands bound, to announce an Israeli order to evacuate the premises. The Zionist regime forces executed him on his return. Those trying to follow such evacuation orders, waving white flags, have been shot at. Medical facilities have been repeatedly invaded by the Zionist regime military in stark violation of international law. Those who could not be evacuated, such as premature babies, have been left to die unattended, even while Israeli regime troops were occupying the building. Other examples of murderous cruelty are documented daily. Unarmed Palestinians, including those waving white flags, have been shot dead by the Zionist regime troops. Palestinian parents have been executed in cold blood in front of their children. There have been repeated episodes of Israeli regime forces gunning down en masse desperate Palestinians trying to reach aid, as happened yet again this week. And even Israeli regime hostages trying to escape their captors have been killed by the very Israeli troops they were trying to surrender to. These are just some of the cases of Israeli regime sadism and barbarity that have surfaced briefly in Western media coverage, soon to be forgotten.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, continue the holy month of Ramadan for the rest of the year in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So dear friends, we are talking about how we must continue the holy month of Ramadan throughout the rest of the year in our Islamic lifestyle. Now, you must be wondering, why are we talking about this when we are, you know, approximately around halfway through the holy month of Ramadan? We should be talking about this towards the end of the holy month of Ramadan. Well, you know, we have a tendency at A to Z to really think about things a little more profoundly. So, for example, when the holy month of Ramadan is ending and we start to talk about, you know, the things that you should have learned or you should have kept in mind in the holy month of Ramadan, well, it's over. What's the benefit of talking about those things at the end of the holy month of Ramadan? So that's why we thought, why don't we talk about these things in the middle of the holy month of Ramadan? And perhaps it could be said we should have talked about them in the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, but we didn't want to overwhelm, you know, all you listeners out there at that point in time. So still, we have a good, solid, probably 2 weeks left in the holy month of Ramadan. You know, we should have been accustomed by now to fasting and to the hunger and thirst, even though perhaps you can never be really accustomed to it. But, you know, at least after 2 weeks, we're kind of, you know, cruise control. And we are understanding what's happening with us. And so at this point, we really need to start to actively think about all of the things that we have been able to master and control and all of the things that we have been able to inculcate and implement in our Islamic lifestyle.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back, dear friends. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how we need to take those things which we learn in the holy month of Ramadan and apply them throughout the rest of our lives and the rest of the year so that we really live that ideal Islamic lifestyle that we are all trying to reach. This is something that is a personal thing in the sense where we should sit down, we should think about all the things that we are learning. For example, you know, most probably and first and foremost, primarily, we have learned that we are able to spiritually overcome our physical and most basic necessities and needs, such as eating and drinking, you know, for relatively long periods of time and over, you know, 29 or 30 days, depending on the sighting of the moon this year. So, you know, we have been able to overcome these basic and very primal desires, you know. And so this is, again, one of the things that we learn every single year. And it's one of the things that we hear every single year, that we are so strong and we are so powerful and we have such a capability that if our spirit and our soul wants to control something, it can control something. It just takes dedication and willpower and intention and sincerity and, of course, a great deal of help from the Almighty Allah. So we don't really have a lot of time, just a few seconds left on the program, at least on my behalf. So please take this into consideration. Sit down and write all of the things that we have learned. Write all of the things that we have been able to accomplish in this holy month of Ramadan so that we can continue those things throughout the rest of our lives and throughout the rest of the year so that we can attain, inshallah, that beautiful, pure, and blessed Islamic lifestyle. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. So alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
The U.S. is offering humanitarian aid to a population it has helped to devastate. The hypocrisy is breathtaking. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iRoads, since Arab and Western countries, including the U.S., began airdropping aid into Gaza, we have wondered, why are they not using land routes as thousands of trucks stacked with vital humanitarian supplies sit on the Egyptian side of the Rafah crossing? According to a February report from Al Jazeera, aerial and satellite footage showed more than 2,000 aid trucks waiting to cross at Rafah. And why are these aid drops coming 5 months after the Zionist regime launched its war on Gaza? While this might seem like a humanitarian effort at first glance, there appear to be ulterior motives at play. Since the war began last October, international appeals have mounted to bring life-saving aid to besieged Palestinians in Gaza. But neither these appeals nor the horrifying video footage that has emerged of starving civilians has moved neighboring countries to stop the Israeli regime atrocities that have killed more than 31,000 people and created conditions of widespread hunger. The Zionist regime's strategy entails asserting absolute control over the humanitarian conditions in Gaza. Why would it agree to airdropped aid while obstructing the delivery of vital goods via land, the latter which would be much easier and cheaper? Regardless of the method, the Zionist regime insists on inspecting all aid that enters Gaza by opting for airdrops and sea bridges instead of utilizing the Rafah land crossing. The Tel Aviv regime is sending a message that Cairo's control over the border area is merely symbolic, while the real levers of power are with the Zionist regime alone. The use of airdrops, especially from Arab countries, also highlights the shortcomings of Arab and American efforts to alleviate the suffering in Gaza. Instead of applying pressure on the child killer regime of Israel to open the Rafah crossing, they have circumvented its refusal by launching a more complex, dangerous, and expensive aid operation. The fabricated regime of Israel routinely uses the media in an attempt to enhance its image and create the perception of humanitarian in times of war. By showcasing aid planes, it diverts attention from the situation at Rafah and aims to dilute public criticism. But it is crucial to critically examine such narratives and manipulations. By ensuring the continuing closure of Rafah, Gaza's sole gateway to the outside world, the Zionist regime further isolates the territory's Palestinian residents. The airdrops it has allowed, meanwhile, have been disorganized, random, and ineffective, failing to address the logistical challenges of aid distribution. The aid drops even turn deadly when parachutes fail to deploy and the boxes hurtle towards Gaza, killing 5 Palestinians who had been eagerly awaiting the delivery of much-needed relief. As one friend in northern Gaza said, "With us being killed, even with the aid dropping, we have experienced all forms of death." As the international community comes together to support the people of Gaza, it is crucial to prioritize the safety and dignity of those in need. We have been pushed to the brink, a paltry symbolic aid drop with no plan for its safe distribution does not help Palestinians but rather deeply humiliate the people of Gaza. Those seen in video footage running towards the airdrops come from all walks of life, including doctors, engineers, and academics. Palestinians are being degraded and then thrown bits of food for millions of hungry mouths. There is a much easier solution. The Zionist regime must immediately open all land crossings into Gaza.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The annual Ramadan Quranic meeting, April 30th, 2019. There are some individuals among good and outstanding Egyptian Qurra who do not frequently use assimilation and whose recitation is very good. Besides, they exert considerable influence. We can cite Abdul Fattah Sha'shai as an example. As you know, he does not use assimilation, but at the same time, he is one of the best and most influential reciters. I hope that Allah, the Exalted, will bestow His mercy and forgiveness on him and on all Qurra. Therefore, I request that Qurra do not bother with assimilation. The same is true of too much repetition. This is not necessary either. Because our time is over now and Adhan is about to be said, I will only raise this point. I request that the audience observe limits when they want to applaud a reciter and when they want to say Allah, Allah. This is also another act of imitating the Arabs. As soon as a reciter of the Holy Quran begins reciting, some people constantly say Allah as if it were one of the necessary requirements after recitation. But it is not necessary to do so at all.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes you are deeply moved by someone's very beautiful and influential recitation, and you applaud them involuntarily. According to the Arabs' tradition, Quranic applause is done by saying Allah, Allah. Of course, this is not particular to the Holy Quran. When someone sings an ordinary song, they say Allah, Allah. There is nothing wrong with this, but if we constantly say Allah, Allah as soon as a reciter begins reciting the Holy Quran, this is not necessary at all. I request that you yourselves advise in those meetings where you are considered as teachers and experts, participants to avoid saying Allah, Allah to excess. When a reciter recites the Holy Quran in a very beautiful and artistic way, it is all right to applaud him. However, one sees that some people say Allahu Akbar as soon as the reciter says, I seek Allah's protection from Satan, the rejected one, a Quranic phrase that is used when someone wants to begin reading the Holy Quran. I hope that God will associate all of you with the Holy Quran and that He will build your life in this world and in the hereafter by the blessedness of the Holy Quran. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Hundreds of people have engaged in a 41-kilometer pilgrimage, symbolically depicting the length of the Gaza Strip and a trek that scores of Palestinians have been forced to make due to the US-backed Israeli campaign of genocide against them. The event has been organized by a collective of Christian bodies. The organizers say it is important to demonstrate that Christian Zionism does not represent them.
The church has been very complicit within this genocide and within Palestinian suppression more generally, and because of that is not condemning what they're doing, is not recognizing what they're doing as ethnic cleansing and genocide, and not speaking out. And we wanted to challenge that narrative and challenge that stance and show an expression of solidarity, show that that's not the only thing coming out of the church.
The demonstration also coincides with South Africa's commemoration of the Sharpeville massacre, when the apartheid regime gunned down 69 protesters in what is recognized as a turning point in the struggle for liberation. For those who participated, the Palestinian suffering resonates deeply.
And what I saw today in my own, as I walked, you know, because it's a pilgrimage, reflecting, I said to myself, I feel my feet, you know, burning. I feel this old legs not moving as it should. But it's nothing in comparison what people are experiencing.
The South African public is still asleep, and they must start waking up to see what Israel is doing. But what they do there, they can also come and do anywhere else in the world.
I'm a proud Jew. I'm not a Zionist, and I never have been. And I think that what the Netanyahu government is doing is actually a moral genocide. Whether they call it illegal, I don't know whether it fits legally, but it's morally a genocide. And I'm appalled. I'm heartbroken. As somebody who's lived through apartheid, we have seen this before. We should know better.
The Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage coincided with the somber Christian period of Lent, and sacrifice and resilience were recurring themes pilgrims pointed to as they attempted to symbolically walk in the footsteps of Gazans. The Gaza ceasefire march is another example of the human resolve for justice, and as Palestinians endure the latest Israeli aggression for almost 6 months now, the people of the world will only intensify their commitment for Palestinian liberation. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
Uh,
Afghanistan's reliance on Pakistan for access to international markets has been a long-standing challenge. However, recent disputes have pushed the Taliban authorities to seek alternatives. The Taliban have said they will invest around $35 million in Iran's Chabahar port, located in the country's southeast. The move aims to reduce Afghanistan's economic dependence on Pakistan, which has been marred by political friction and trade disruptions.
Chabahar is one of the most important economic and trade routes for Afghanistan. The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan tries to have strong bilateral economic and trade relations with Iran as part of its economic policy. This port allows Afghanistan to broaden its trade with Iran, West Asia, and Europe. That's why we are specially focused on Chabahar and seek to invest there.
Analysts believe this could be a turning point for Afghanistan's international trade relations. They say that Iran has been an ideal trade partner for Afghanistan, and accessing Chabahar port will further facilitate Afghanistan's regional cooperation.
The benefits of Chabahar port for Afghanistan include its short distance with the country's borders. It allows goods to enter our country at a low price. It is especially suitable with the overall economic situation of Afghans. Another benefit is that it opens a big route for our exports, which is in dire need of expansion. When we become able to expand our exports, our economy will grow rapidly.
As the Taliban government seeks to diversify its trade routes and reduce its reliance on Pakistan, the decision to invest in Iran's Chabahar port marks a significant shift in Afghanistan's economic strategy. Experts say the outcome of this move will not only impact Afghanistan's relations with Pakistan, but also shape the geopolitical dynamics in the region. Iran and Afghanistan have the potential and opportunity to cooperate in many fields. Trade and industry in particular can bring the two neighbors closer in a very volatile region. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The recent European Council President Charles Michel's warning that the European Union needs to ramp up its military production and shift to a war economy mode in response to an alleged threat posed by Russia has sparked international alarm and mixed reactions in Europe. Earlier this week, Michel wrote in an opinion editorial run by a media specialized in EU affairs that if Europe wants peace, it must prepare for war, arguing that although the EU's military manufacturing capacity has increased by 50% since the start of the Ukraine-Russia war in 2022, far more was needed.
Our European awakening is just beginning to take shape, and I would like to tell you what I feel. The time has come to create a real union of defense coupled with a true defense single market.
Michel added that the European Union must finally take responsibility for its own security. For decades, the European Union has relied heavily on the United States and the Western military alliance NATO for its security. Analysts believe that the dependency on external powers by the 27-member bloc has resulted in a complete loss of its own geopolitical and strategic autonomy.
In questo momento,
at this point in time, the EU cannot be militarily independent. It can't adopt autonomous strategies. Today, Europe must create its own defense system so that in 30 years' time, it can really be geopolitically autonomous. If we continue to put national interests ahead, all individual states, including Italy, would lose geopolitical relevance.
Michel's remarks come as Ukrainian and international politicians and experts are warning that ammunition shortages are resulting in the losses of territory to Russia.
Michel is trying to keep Germany under pressure, demanding together with the French government that Berlin provide Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles Taurus. German Chancellor Scholz has so far said no to this request to avoid a war escalation, adding that his country has already provided Kiev with arms for 7 billion euros, while France is struggling to pay for Ukraine military aid.
On Wednesday, the Italian former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte accused the current Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of dragging Italy into World War III after having turned the country into an irrelevant, subjugated power. Max Civili, Rome.
Nowruz, the beginning of the Persian New Year, has always given energy and hope to people celebrating the event to observe Iranian traditions and enter the new year with a totally fresh spirit. The arrival of Nowruz for Iranians is tantamount to shopping spree and finishing their undone work. Millions of Iranians embrace the turn of the Persian year and celebrate the spring festival with many ceremonial customs waiting to be observed.
Well, everybody is busy shopping. It is time of Nowruz and the new year.